and sweep it high. Run flat, stay low. Run the mountain, run the road. Run past the eight stand to the commode. Oh, run sweep it high. Run flat, stay low. One stream, two guys, mountain apple.
Listen, this is it's October, and so it's just ghosts. It's just ghosts that are in the audio feed at this point. That's why it's echoey. Just trying ghosts. To be extra spooky for you guys.
Ghosts in the studio. Are we still very echoey?
No,
all says good better. Now. Good. Much better. Okay, I turned off one of the other mics, so little baby steps. We didn't have to completely re-roll the intro this time. So,
people anyways, love that though. Yeah, they were just like, hey,
keep rolling it. Seeing the intro, it's like we got to get out and do some running together more. I mean,
this is true.
Yeah, we're on the comeback tour. Start
correct. It sounds like we both might actually be running, which is rare. Usually, it's one or the other. To have both of us doing it at the same time is kind of crazy. So how are you doing, sir? Word on the street is you might have a. You might have actually logged miles that appeared on Strava that weren't directly related to a 100-mile race. What's up?
Yeah, well, I had to do a lot of chasing people at the Broken Arrow Sky Race. So a little, you know, it was definitely, it was work related, but then I got a nice run in with Courtney and with Dylan on Sunday before we came back. And that was pretty nice, actually, even though it was starting to get really smoky again. Mm-hmm. It was totally clear on Friday, pretty great on Saturday, and then it started to kind of roll in, and then Sunday, once the race ended, it got real bad. So
it's the nature of being in the Sierra Nevadas right now, unfortunately, but glad that we were able to get 3 days of quality racing at Broken Arrow off. It seemed like without a hitch. So
yeah, it felt like as soon as the races ended, that's when it kind of rolled back in. So I think they dodge the bullet on that one, so to speak. But yeah, for those of you tuning in maybe for the first time, what is this podcast? What is this show? We're just a couple guys talking about running stuff. We're going to touch on the whole spectrum, really. We've got the trail and ultra scene. We've got the road and track scene and kind of everything in between and beyond, I would say.
Yeah.
That's it.
And life. Liberty and life. Pursuit of happiness.
Yeah. It's a good spot to hang out. We do have the chat going. So, you know, I forgot to tweet this out. I should probably do that.
Doing it live.
Tweet it live.
That's all G. Yeah. So obviously if you're in the chat, do feel free to shoot us questions, comments, concerns, thoughts, needs, emotions. We'll go ahead and address those on the fly if they're worthwhile. No promises. I don't read the chat. That's a Jamil problem. But then we're also going to delve into some news the weekend that was, and then preview what is forthcoming next week or so, which is a very busy week, especially in the run flat side of the house. So how do you want to get started, sir? Do you want to do run steep news first? Do you want me to hop into the run flat?
Are you drinking anything tonight?
Oh, yeah. That's fair. That's a good question. I have two beverages by my side. One is this, I think, Murray Pepino LaCroix. It's like the extra bougie LaCroix.
The thin, tall cans.
Yeah, the thin, tall one.
Is that a cucumber?
Blackberry cucumber. Yeah. I haven't had this one yet, but they're like all over our fridge right now. I did a track workout earlier and I am severely dehydrated. So I needed something that vaguely resembles actual water. But then because it is October, yes, we're in the final quarter of 2021 already somehow. I have gotten what is my favorite autumn beer. And if you've not had this and you're a beer drinker, I highly encourage you to track this down. It is from Southern Tier Brewing, Pumpkin. The Imperial Pumpkin Ale. It's delicious. It's phenomenal. It is all the joys of pumpkin spice, but in a very well-balanced, very delicious alcoholic beverage. And coming in at a cool, what, 8.6% ABV might make for a very fun end of this show
8. By the time 6. I finish it. Damn.
That is right. That's where we're legit. At. But, sir, what you got?
I'm rocking the 6.5%. This is just the go-to because it's in the fridge, but it's the Papago Desert Sage Orange IPA. This is a collab beer between Aravipa Running and Huss Brewing, local brewer. And this is formerly the Hoppy Javelina IPA, and they rebranded it. So crack it open. Oh, holy shit.
Attaboy, just foaming everywhere. Just off the
all
top.
Right, I'm going to need a second.
I was going to shout him out. So the one and only time I've ever done any Ragnar event, Jamil and I were part of an Aravipa team. And this is the crazy beer opener. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can see that this is tricked out. It's really a utility knife more than anything. But this is the only bottle opener I could find. So we are getting it going. I can't believe he pulled such a rookie. I mean, I can believe it because it's Jamil, but really just foamed up his entire setup. His real, real high school American Pie status. All the more reason why, if you are coming to the Javelina 100, you got to make sure that you track Jamil and I down somewhere around headquarters, depending on the commentary schedule, because we will be live streaming the entire Javelina 100 here on YouTube. I think it's actually going to be on the Aravipa Running YouTube page, but when we're not commentating, we will be out on the scene. I'll be DJing in the wee hours of the night / early morning, Saturday into Sunday, which is the perfect time to watch Jamil have a couple drinks and get his real thoughts on some topics. So if you ever want to understand and know what Jamil is really thinking about the running world, that's the time. Oh, he's back. Hey, buddy.
Yeah, we're doing great. So, did you just jump right into Run Flat News?
No. You can go listen to that later. Yeah, cool. You want
me? So I'm not drinking. I'm not drinking tonight. We're doing great.
You're fine. No, you just spilled half your beer. It's cool.
I think those ones have gone bad, so we're just gonna get rid of those.
There's no such thing. No alcohol left behind. All right, I'll do some Run Flat News. So let's talk about the weekend that was, and then we'll hop forward and give a little highlight of what we'll touch on later in the show. So weekend that was, let's start on the cross-country scene for the collegiates. We gave a little bit of a preview last week's episode. Pretty low-key week. A lot of folks are just gearing up for, at least in terms of Division I, the pre-national meets and Nuttycombe that are coming up in 2 short weeks from now, but we did have some competition at that Joe Piani Invitational at Notre Dame. On the men's side, Notre Dame ran literally nobody of note. So the number 2 team in the nation really just sandbagged their own home meet, took 11th place, nothing too crazy there on the men's side. We saw a Furman team come out and win that pretty handedly. On the women's side, NC State, the co-number 1 team in the nation, just dominated, scored like 38 points to just, like, you just don't see that often, especially when you have the number 3 team in the nation also in the same meet. But they beat them by like 56 points. So NC State, 38 points over New Mexico's 94. Alabama took the top 2 individual spots and then took 3rd overall as a team. Don't sleep on them. They actually had one person who wasn't running in this meet. So if they can get that 5th runner score down a little bit, they might actually have a chance to take a podium spot come nationals. But Joe Piani on the women's side, fantastic domination. On the men's side, left a bit to be desired. We had the Paul Short run. It happened. North Carolina with the 1-point victory over Villanova on the men's side. Both of these teams were, I think, tied for like ranked 23, 24, 25 in the national polls. So a good showing for them, especially to take down some other ranked competitors, including some Division II talent in Adams State and Division III talent and John Carroll. On the women's side, came down to a tiebreaker. Northern Arizona beat the tiebreaker over Villanova. Both of them were tied at 85 points, but Northern Arizona had a better first, second, and fifth runner. Because in college, it's head-to-head, first runners, second runners, third runners, fourth runners, fifth runners, instead of the who had the best sixth place. It's a weird thing. Don't trip off of it. It was fine. On the Live in Lieu Cross Country Classic, that essentially was the de facto Division III pre-nationals, because Louisville will be the home of the Division III national championships in November. We saw, how do we put this? MIT on the men's side just like really put their stamp on this race. They won with 90 points, I believe, over Claremont Mud Scripps. Pomona Pitzer was not at this meet. Neither was Williams. So those would have been your top, those top programs to go against MIT. We fully expected them to have a pretty dominating performance, and they did achieve that. So we'll see what happens here in the next couple of weeks as we get back to that regional sort of structure. On the women's side, Claremont Mud Scripps just cruised, just not even close. UW La Crosse, I think, was second on the women's side. So just pretty much played scratch for the Division III pre-nats. But we'll see what happens now that we are getting to the crux of what postseason sort of looks like with conference meets coming up here in, I believe, 2 or 3 weeks. So that's the cross-country scene on the college side. But the pros, they were out there crushing it as well, specifically in London at the London Marathon. It was the most deep women's race that we've ever seen. We had five women dip under the 2:19 mark. That's never been achieved before. Led out by Jocelyn Chepkosgei for the win in 2:17:43. We had it was just like a huge pack of the women went through the half together. And at that point, you were kind of looking at it like, we don't know how fast this is going to go, but there's going to be a lot of depth in this race. And that's exactly how it played out. So the first five women under 2:19, sixth place was at 2:20 mid. And then we had two more women in the 2:21s. So very heavy on the top end for the women. On the men's side, we still have not seen somebody in the World Marathon Majors break 2:04 thus far. So we had Cisse Lema, the surprise victor, in 2:04:01, which is kind of a bummer for him, because the way that the prize money worked out for London is, yes, you get certain money for winning, but you also get these time bonuses. So if he'd have just ran 2 seconds faster, he had literally thousands of dollars more coming to him. But naturally, as one would do when they're finishing at a World Marathon Major, you're kind of like shouting out the crowd and waving. You're like, yes, this is it. It's finally happening. And that 2 seconds cost him in the pocketbook. I'm sure his sponsors at Nike will help him accordingly. But Lima did miss out on a little bit of a payday. But hey, when you can win the London Marathon, you should embrace that moment, because it doesn't come every year. And then Vincent Kipchumba was in second. People thought that he had a legitimate chance going in to battle. He was just 27 seconds back. So all in all, pretty, I'm not gonna say mediocre day on the men's side, but folks were hoping for some faster times, especially since Berlin hadn't been particularly fast. So now all eyes will turn this weekend to Chicago, which is also notoriously a faster course, and to see if finally in one of these World Marathon Majors, one of the men can break 2:04. And you know, we must note, because we are talking about London, that was the second stop on Shalane Flanagan's I'm going to run six marathons in 6 or 7 weeks this fall. And she clocked a 2:38:32 in Berlin. You're like, all right, cool. She's going to be smooth. Like, just get through London and then get back to the U.S. for what's going to be this double this upcoming weekend. No, she doesn't just coast. She runs 2:35:04, right? Takes another 3.5 minutes off of her time in Berlin. having just run a marathon 7 days prior. So maybe Shalane's finally learning the wisdom of many ultra runners, being like, we're just going to do stupid long long runs every weekend, and she's going to progressively get faster. So we'll see what happens this weekend. We've got Chicago Marathon on Sunday, Boston Marathon on Monday. She's not the only person doing a double, but we'll get into that as we preview later on in the show. But that's Run Flat news in terms of the weekend that was. But there was some fun stuff that happened in the ultra scene and the mountain and trail scene. So Mr. Run Steep himself, dude, what went down this weekend?
Well, we got one little comment in the chat. By the way, we are monitoring the chat, so please say something. It says it literally says say something dot dot dot.
Okay.
And we've got Skylar, thoughts on the 44-year-old EIU cross country school record going down.
Yeah, what I feel like Matt sent this. Okay, so
really? You think?
Yeah. Yeah, so if you were a fan of the pod back in the spring, we talked a lot about EIU, partially because of some interesting race results in the middle of the season with some weird lines on the track, but also because they had some pretty stud folks qualifying for their national meet. And so, yeah, it was only a matter of time before the big names kept coming out. I didn't expect it to happen this week. I thought it was going to be more of a regionals nationals conversation, especially since Louisville is historically a fair but relatively fast course. But yeah, EIU. And Matt, you just wanted the shout out. The course record, the school record did go down. And so let's give some love to Dustin Hatfield, 23:28 at Louisville. You know, he did the damn thing. I'm not saying he's going to vie for the individual title come the national meet, but 23:28 is fast for an 8K. It is respectable. It's good. You should feel very happy about that. And if he can keep this momentum going when the conditions get a little bit more muddy, then he's in a good spot. He's in a good spot for sure. So that's it. Those are my thoughts. Expected at some point, he's a little ahead of schedule. Let's keep that energy until November.
All right. That was, well, we do have another question here. This is from Chris Warden. Hey, Chris, what's up? Got your email. We'll respond shortly. So he says, just tuning in, have you hit on the IAU shedding the 1,000-mile, 1,000K, and 144-hour disciplines? We haven't yet. I haven't barely, honestly, even been able to digest that yet. But we just for those of you tuning in or don't know what this is about, the IAU, International Association of Ultra Runners, has some new, there's some new guidelines surrounding world records, ratification process, requirements, et cetera, et cetera. They were just approved like 2 weeks ago and they'll take it into effect 2022. So some things that are interesting, they apparently will no longer manage the world records for those three distances I just said. So 6 day races, 1,000 miles, 1,000 kilometers. But they now will manage it for 50K and 100K, apparently. And then let's see, the official nomenclature. I don't even know what that word means right now.
Nomenclature.
So the first, yeah, official naming of those will be the International Association of Ultra Runners World Records and then World Athletics World Records. Okay. There's an I Run Far article. Check it out. Like, if you want to get in the nitty gritty, and you can probably read their full report as well. Trying to see what else there is here. It sounds like for an IAU world record, you must have three athletes of the same gender as the potential record holder must participate in the race. To be considered for a ratification, there must be evidence of a negative doping test following current world anti-doping rules. for an IAU world record to be valid, the event must take place using World Athletics regulations and must have an IAU label. That's like the bronze, silver, and gold label. So events that are pursuing world records for 50K, 50 mile, 6 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours, 48 hours. Did I say 100 mile or do they not have that? 50K, 100K? Yeah, 100 mile. 50K, 100K. You need to get an IAU label. So just it's like a alert to race directors. Get your IAU labels.
All right. Two quick follow-ups for you. I don't know if you have this information off the top of your head. One, from a – the 6 days seems like a kind of big deal because it, I can at least name several six-day races that happen. But the 1,000-mile and 1,000K, that seems less common.
Well, 1,000K will be within 6 days.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying like –
Well, no, actually not
chasing that.
No, because 1,000K is 620 miles. So the only time people are going to be hitting 1,000K is in a 10-day, typically.
Okay.
And then for a 1,000-mile race, I mean, there's just – I don't even know. There might be like 1,000-mile race out there in existence currently.
So this makes perfect sense for them to go with a more common distance. So several – 50K, 100K, common distances versus
probably
those that aren't. Okay, so that's the first part. Second part, from a needing an IAU label thing, is this like one of those money grab situations? Are we officially on the like, you need to pay to then be labeled for this and have a shot at it? Like, is this an opportunity for them to capitalize financially? Not saying that that's their main motivation. It's just the question I have off the jump.
You know what? It's been a minute since I've labeled one of these of our races. I'm trying to think if there's even a cost to it, though. So that would kind of negate that.
I mean, yeah, if it's free and it's just like, hey, you need to certify that the course is legitimate distance and all that, that's fine. But if it's like, hey, you have to pay us $120 or 200 euros to certify.
I think the biggest thing is that there is like someone checking that it's a measured course, and it conforms to like the IAAF or the World Athletics regulations, essentially.
No, that's all right.
And they're free. They're free.
Cool. All right. So just making sure.
It's more about I think it's more about making sure that it's legit and recognized, and it's not just someone kind of making something up.
Okay.
So, that's just for the bronze, like the bronze base level. I don't think they specified it has to be a certain color because there's like the silver and gold, and you have to have like a certain competitive field or a certain number of record holders that are like in the race to qualify for that, or have a certain number of records that have been set at that event. So.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. That was a lot. I mean, I can't believe they turned their back on the 6 day. Unbelievable.
That does seem a little odd. But that could also be American centric just because we have like 6 days in the dome and we have,
no, six days global.
Yeah. I don't know. This is, I'm in run flat side. This is why I'm looking at you. Like, I don't know. You tell me.
I mean, it's probably fine. We're still doing the 6 days. So. Still doing them.
Hey, it's fine. It's not about records all the time. Sometimes you just want personal glory.
That's right.
Embrace it.
Let's see here. Alan Stark, cops in the chat. Arkansas Traveler was this weekend. Unfortunately, the guy I was following DNF'd. We will talk about that in a second. And then AJW, who do you guys have on the podium at Javelina this year? I don't know. I honestly, maybe we need to like do that in next week's show, like a dedicated episode.
Which is to say I need to research.
Cause... Yeah. And we just let in, we cleared the wait list, I believe, this week. So I think there's like 7 spots available. You can just go sign up right now. So there's probably been some late additions that we need to circle back on. I did see Cole Watson this weekend out of Broken Arrow.
I bet you did.
And I know he's running. It's gonna be a great field.
Hoka Bondi X's? Tens? X's. What do we call them, those? Is it Bondi Tens or Bondi X? I don't know. Whatever. Every Hoka athlete's been hyping those over the past 5 days. And Javelina is like the one ultra, well, I guess Tunnel Hill. So two ultras that you might actually be able to get away with that shoe. So it'll be interesting to see.
All right.
Javelina 100, sponsored by Hoka.
That's right. On the trail news, trail and ultra news, Broken Arrow was this weekend. I was fortunate enough to be up there. They had 3 days of racing, four races. So the VK, Vertical K, was on Friday. And we saw Solomon athlete Darren Thomas take the win on the men's side. It's funny, Darren apparently ran Barkley in 2015, and I totally didn't realize he was out there, which is really funny. You would think he was like just graduated college, or he was still in college when he ran it. But he had a really great run at Mount Marathon earlier this year, and he's been kind of tearing it up on the mountain scene lately. David Sinclair was right after him. He's another name that is tearing it up on these types of runs. And then Allie Mack was first for the women for the VK. Hillary Allen was second. And next day we saw it's like a 45 or 48K. Typically it's a 52K. They had a little adjustment. Allie Mack doubled back, took the win. It's a two loop course. And first place for the men was Seth Ruling, and he destroyed everyone. He had a 16-minute lead. And I was running with him for a minute there, and he was asking me about Black Canyon and if I could let him in off the wait list, which is really hilarious. Like, okay. Good job.
We'll see how keep you it do. Up. You gotta win by 20, then we'll talk.
Yeah. And then the last race was on Sunday. This was the 26K. It was a little short this year as well. And this was a mountain running, World Mountain Running Association race. It was also the finale of the Golden Trail National Series for US Canada. Mm-hmm. And so the top three from the series, they had four races in the Golden Trail National Series, are all going to the Azores, which is the final or championship for the global series. So that was kind of cool. It was a little weird this year because we had two US-based races, Pikes Peak and Broken Arrow, and two Canadian races, Quebec Mega Trail and Whistler Alpine Meadows. And so because of the travel restrictions in Canada, I don't know of any US athletes that traveled to Quebec. There were no competitive ones that traveled to Whistler Alpine, and no Canadian athletes made it down here. And I don't think they even ran the other province races. So essentially, if you were decently competitive and you went to Pikes Peak and Golden Arrow, you got a good shot at the series. So not to downplay those that did win it, but Joe Gray, Darren Thomas, David Sinclair. Oh no. Andy Wacker, I'm sorry. Those three were your top three in the 26K. And it was pretty exciting. I was filming about 2 miles from the finish when those guys came past. And I put this photo on my Instagram story. You could see like all three of them right in a row on the trail. Just within a few seconds of one another, Darren was officially 2 seconds behind Joe at the finish. He was gaining on him the whole downhill. And then Andy Wacker was, what is it, like 25 seconds after Darren or something? Super competitive there. Yeah. Legit. And then Janelle Lynx had a bit of a cushion. She won in 2:14. And then MK Sullivan and Bailey Kowalczyk. So, yeah. It was a good time. They had their live stream. They had it on the VK on Friday and then the 26K on Sunday. Did you catch any of that?
I did not, unfortunately. Running my own race on Sunday, and Friday I had work. So, yeah, missed it. But did hear good things from people who did have the luxury of seeing it. Obviously saw a lot of great content come out on Instagram, especially for Debo, hyping it up, before, during, and after the fact. But hey, before we get too far, there was also a fourth race that also occurred on Sunday, that 11K.
Yep.
And we got to talk about it for one main reason, which is near and dear to my heart, for two reasons. One, in terms of run flatness, and two, Bay Area love. We had a track athlete run her first ever trail race. And I think she's like, what, a year postpartum again? She's notoriously been crushing it. Do you have this photo? Should I send it to you? Can we pop it up here?
I don't know if I have the possibility to get it up at the moment. I think our stuff's a little messed up.
That is absurd. Let me see if I can pull it up on my...
Oh, yeah. We can pull it up on the screen.
Yeah, let's do that.
Or just from a phone or something. Maybe I can get it on the iPad and show it off.
I believe in you. Broken Arrow. It's great audio content. No. So Alicia Montano. Do we have, oh man, this photo was so hilarious because it encapsulated, like, if you've ever like just been running around your local park and like people who are playing basketball or students or anything, or just like, why is this person running for fun? Like, it was that photo at the end. It's just like, yeah, no, this is what it looks like when you dunk on folks.
This one?
All right. I can't find it.
Yeah. I mean, this is it, but you probably can't see it.
I know. She's literally just like,
okay,
on the bench, just completely reclined, just like, what is life?
Do you want to do it? Do you want to do an introduction? Alicia Montano. You can go to @AlysiaMontano on Instagram. Go ahead.
No, I mean, she's been around for ages at this point, like a solid decade. I mean, multiple Olympic trials. She's run like completely pregnant in the 800, just been like, listen, I qualified. I'm just going to do this anyway. I have no chance of making the Olympic team, but like, I'm just going to show that mothers are great. She also has a podcast herself with a few other athletes talking about women in sport, women runners, and you know, just a lot of the difficulties, challenges, nuance that comes with being a female athlete. So yeah, she's been a great ambassador for the sport, often running in the Berkeley area, still on the Caltrack. So yeah, shout out to her for going well outside of her norm, because 11K is a hell of a lot further than 0.8K. So good on her. Super excited to see yet another track athlete making their way to the trail scene, following, you know, Stephanie Garcia doing so at the USATF Trail Half Marathon just a couple weeks ago. So yeah, man, it was a good race. 11K was fun. And there were a couple people, I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, but I saw some scuttle about several people who ran all four events, like ran the VK Friday, ran the 52K Saturday, ran the quote unquote 26K Sunday, then turned around like half an hour later and ran the 11K. Was Max King one of those? I feel like, I don't know if he ran all four, but I definitely saw something on Strava where he was like, I don't know why I thought the 11K was a good idea. So it's a good time. I think people are just excited to be out, which we thought would be the case with Broken Arrow. Excited to be back a part of the community. And some people might've just had a lot of fun getting out there on the mountains and training. It's more vert in 3 days than I typically do in a month. Probably 5 months. So good on them to make it happen.
Yeah. So Alicia, she also, I got to mention, has her own activewear brand for mothers. I don't know if you knew that. It's called Caden Shea, and it has like a access for nursing. So check that out. Got to shout that out. They had a great women's panel. We actually, Sunday night before we flew back, we all did like dinner and drinks, and she came out. It was a lot of fun just kind of getting to know her more. I think her youngest is 20 months now, but her husband drove the kids out for the day and they were at the finish line. So that was, yeah, super fun. And so, yeah, she's excited to be on the trail scene. She runs in ultras now, and yeah, she's pumped. She's like, I think we'll be seeing more of her. Yeah, she seemed to have a good time. Logan Williams was the instigator behind the quad. He ran all four races. He shotgunned a beer in between the 26K and the 11K. And then all of the Solomon teammates. So that's why, like, Max and you saw Kieran and I think Jeff Stearns. So they all ran the 26K and then they joined him for like a cool down lap. And Max was saying they got to that first aid station on the 11K and they were just like parked themselves there, just chowing down. So it was like a cool down basically, but it was good.
Still count. Listen, you can't cool down with like 2,000 feet of climbing. I'm sorry. It's not acceptable.
In the 11K. Yeah. Well, yeah. It did take them a really long time. I think it was a couple hours. So yeah, I mean, it was a good time. Someone was asking how the coverage worked out. You can go watch it again and it is available on YouTube. They did 4 hours of coverage on Sunday. I was watching and listening to it at least the first couple hours until I had to chase people back down the mountain. But that beta was great. Courtney DeWalter was an on-course correspondent. They had some really killer drone shots right at the stairway to heaven, the ladder that's up at the top of the resort there. And I think there was a lot more in the second half. I just didn't catch it. So you can rewatch it, the Broken Arrow Sky Race YouTube channel. And it was also on the Golden Trail Series YouTube channel. So you can check either of those. Matt Feldhake in the chat says it was really good. So go check it out. Yeah, that's Broken Arrow.
Sweet. But there was some stuff happening down the road, down the highway, down 50. 80, one of
down,
those freeways.
Down
in Sacramento, we had another ultra. The USATF 100K championships were happening in a admittedly very warm Sacramento. It was an oddly hot Northern California weekend. It was like 85, 90 degrees in the Bay Area. So Sacramento had to be like 100 plus. But It was an interesting field. Let's put it that way. Do you have the results up?
No, I'm trying to find them. So that's the weird thing. It wasn't. I actually was looking at some ultra results because I was scripting a show, but I run far. It seems like they completely missed it, unless I'm brain dead. But I don't think they caught it.
So luckily our good friends at Atra don't miss anything. So they were covering it. They were tweeting out about it. The whole like USATF Mutt channel was going. Listen, this is what it came down to. Rajpal Panu just stunted on everyone. One for the men in 6:57:33. He is originally from the Sacramento area. He's been training up in Denver during the pandemic because he had like remote teaching capabilities. And so he's like, I'm just going to go to altitude and like live his best life. Came down for Carbon X2, obviously did phenomenal things there. And so this is the first time we've seen him in a little bit. But he gets his first national champion. I'm pretty sure it's his first national championship. Jeff Burns was second for the men in 7:44:12. And third place for the men was actually also the first master, Alexander Suchi, I want to say is how you pronounce it, in 10:45:04. That is correct. You're third place person in the 100K road champion. National championships ran 10:45:04.
No,
which it is what it is. So cool.
Come on, dude. What is happening?
Listen, I don't know.
You gotta be stop it. Stop.
I'm just telling you, I'm giving you the facts of the case.
Where's the outrage? What is happening here?
Now that our
100K national championship, how many total participants?
Okay, now you want me to actually do research here. So before I give you the total number,
sorry for jumping in. Go ahead.
No. I will definitely get to that. That's a whole other tab. I got to open and scroll and count. He was not third overall. That goes to the first female overall, which is Elizabeth Northern. She had never run 100K before. The furthest she'd ever run was like 48 miles in training or something like that. So she takes third overall in 7:51.58. Sunduk Kim takes second for the women in 9:20.10. And Rachel Kelly was third for the women in 10:15.10. So for those keeping track at home, the overall top six were Raj, Jeff Burns, Elizabeth, Sunduk, Rachel, Alexander. And then from Alexander to seventh place was another 77 minutes to the fourth place male, seventh place overall, first over 60 finisher in the field. That would be Chuck Amatol. And so to answer your question, Mr. Curry, we had, according to the official website, or at least like the live tracking results, we had 10 finishers, one DNF, and seven DNSs. So 11 people apparently started.
All right. This is a national tragedy is what this is. I mean, it's a 10K loop. Okay. It was a 10K loop. We should be putting more into these. I think like something's got to happen here, Matt. Let's get a brief going on this, buddy. I think we could do better. Go ahead.
No, the one thing I do want to mention is, this website seems a little off. I feel like there must've been more people, but,
really?
I would hope so. But, one person, especially on the that we expected to perform well on the women's side, Kaylee Demersian was a late DNF. She was crushing it. Everybody thought she was on pace to win the whole thing. And then magically was found off course and had to be transported to the hospital. So it sounds like she's fine. She's reported out on social media that like she went, she got some IVs. So she's on the mend, but a former standout podium performer, I believe, Ed Haviland 100, was on pace to also take, I believe, her first championship before things went a little sideways for her. So that's unfortunate. But even with her in play, that still would have been a very let's go ahead and say a field that would have left a bit to be desired for a national championship. So I don't know if people just didn't know this one was happening. People really don't want to run 100K on the roads. I don't know what happened.
No,
but
I mean, look at Carbon X2 or you know, the Carbon X. Like, I think there is interest. I think that, yeah, there's potentially not good marketing, or like I didn't know about it. It seems like it was, and maybe I wasn't paying attention, but I don't know. I feel like it could be live streamed as well. Like there's no reason, especially a 10K loop, that could maybe add some more interesting elements to it. Just spitballing.
Listen, we
if you go to the comments section, no one seems to care. Matt Feldhake does. He says actually that USATF shouldn't be governing stuff beyond the marathon. No one cares about national championships. We need to invest into the ultra distances, make the races more exciting, etc. So Yeah, and I don't know. It feels like there are a lot more athletes that want to run fast, but like the national championship being held on a 90 degree day in Sacramento. I mean, also probably not the best choice. I think that, you know, we need to see cooler temperatures than that if we're like going to have a national championship.
Well, the issue, I don't know if that's specific to just this event though, because we also have Jackpot that serves as the 100 mile championships in April in Vegas or outside of Vegas. So cool time in Nevada.
Like maybe these were rescheduled events. Cause normally Jackpot I think is February. So maybe we don't know the whole story and it got rescheduled and that's why there was such a small field. So
this is my chance.
This could have been you. You could be on the team.
Listen, Raj was going to take that, sure.
But yeah, because how many spots like make it?
I don't think it's like an outright top three automatically go. Like I think it's all a selection based. There's like A standard, B standard type things. But damn, like this would have been. I don't know. I wanted more, personally. That's just me.
Yep.
What's next year? Let me look at 2022. Let me just start building my season around that.
That's right. I don't know. I shouldn't be so harsh, but this was just a gut reaction. It would be exciting to have, you know, 100 athletes going at it, you know, on the roads. That's it.
All right. Let's look this up. 2022 US 100K team qualifications.
All right, we got some ideas here in the chat. Number one, advertise the race. Number two, put together a live stream that keeps people's attention. Three, put up some real prize money to attract top racers. And get Vegas involved with live betting. Love it.
This is even the USATF page for this is kind of all over the board because it's to qualify for the 2022 national team. The selection window started at the beginning of 2021, but they're really looking at 22 JFK comrades from this year or next year. And this year's Tussie Mountainback 50 miler, which is in 2 weeks.
All right.
Plus the winner of the 100K national championship. So basically, this is a national championship that like is not going to be useful to really like move you onto the team.
Because first place gets a spot, stands, though, right?
Theoretically, but here's the thing: in terms of the current folks who are like have met some criterion of like time standards, top three at the world championships. National champion auto qualifier, yes, national champions auto qualifier, or like hit specified races on the men's side. All four current qualified athletes are from the Carbon X2 event. It's Walmsley, Raj, who will again move into Criterion 3 and be an auto, Chris Brown, and Craig Hunt, the four people who broke 7 hours. That's it on.
Which is great. I mean, essentially that was your championship right there, except it was Hoka athletes only, you know? Like we should just grant them the championship if they do it again and then have it like have them be able to invite or have other people attend it. That'd be pretty cool.
So apparently if we really care about the 2022 US 100K team, Tussie Mountainback 50 miler on the 24th and next year's JFK and comrades. Those are the big focused, well-established races we need to keep our eyes on, or people just running crazy fast, sub 5:40 for the men, sub 6:40 for the women in the 50 mile. That's what we're looking at
on any course you want though.
I mean, as long as it's certified,
sure.
That's what it looks like. So if you're at home and you're like, you know, I'm tired of virtual races, train for that 5:46:40 timestamp, you may have a shot at making this 100K road team. Just said it.
All right. So what we're hearing is we're gonna be scouting a course for a 100K championship for 2023.
Great. Take the.
We'll put a bid
marathon
in.
Marathon project. No, wait.
Course.
Not marathon project. Corvettes 2. Same thing. Just take that loop. Let's do it again.
Yeah, exactly.
Run it back.
100%. All right. We got a lot of action in the chat. They're really picking up on this now. So we got some real good brainstorming going on here. We got to touch base with this. So we got to get Vegas. So we got the Vegas involved. DraftKings with the betting, apparently. Bring back the heyday of pedestrianism. We're talking, we'd like to see 6-day races come back to Madison Square Garden. Or if ultras became the new horse racing, as far as betting goes. And then, let's see, duplicate the environment that Europe does for a modern 6-day. Drinks, food, music, etc. Sunday family day. All right. Great.
So like Javelina. Got it.
Sure. Cool. Yeah, as far as 6 days go, when I was at the Dome in Alaska, we were like, that'd be kind of fun to put on a 6-day track race. They are apparently building an indoor 400-meter track in South Scottsdale. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Interesting. Okay.
You can hold it whenever you want to.
I can get down with that.
Yeah.
Is it going? So, but the big thing, not even though it's a 400 meter track, they're not all created equal. And so it's how tight are the turns? That's going to be the question I have, if it's going to be for ultra purposes. But
would a normal 400 work?
I mean, it's just a function of, you know, is the straightaway closer to 94 meters than 100? Because then you can like loosen up the curves a little bit, which for an ultra, even though you switch directions, might be just a little bit kinder to folks. It's a real inside baseball question.
We'll see. We just came across it after the Dome, and it's still like a conceptualized thing, and it was going to be built in two phases. So we have to like see if it actually becomes a reality, but it's being put together by someone that owns like a coaching app platform like a run coach or has a track group. So their phase one is going to be a 200 meter track that's banked inside
of a
bubble, I guess. And then like one of those blow up, you know what I'm talking about? And then they're going to like phase two is going to be to build the full size 400 meter track in like a real building, the whole nine yards, and host track meets and coat and training and track nights and whatever else. So does Arizona allow sports betting?
No.
It's not McMillan, Matt. It's I think it's like Run Right, I'm gonna say. I could search for it real quick. This is good.
Yeah, because I know Altus is leaving to go to
Run,
Atlanta.
Okay. Run Right Track and Field. RUNRITE Track and Field, transforming the sport with high-tech indoor track and field arenas. So you're going to build a bunch of these things?
Hey, listen. The one thing I will say, this as somebody who went to school on the East Coast, coming from the West Coast, indoor track, very different beast, very fun. Something that we don't get to appreciate unless you were like in those very specific environments in really the Northeast, or like you go to, what is it, Simplot in like Idaho. So I'm all for more indoor tracks, especially because it's the opposite issue in Arizona. It just gets hot as hell. So if you can temperature control a fun track event in the summer, like that'd be fun. Like you finish your outdoor season and then you're like, cool, let's do some all-comers meets on an indoor track. 200 tracks are crazy, but they are fun. So I'm here for it.
So yeah, this thing, actually it says that there's going to be, oh, this is really interesting. So, they're apparently going to build a facility in Arizona and in Texas. And it's going to be a host site for over 48 weeks of indoor track and field competitions, as well as the home of the Run Right Runner Fitness Challenge.
I don't know what that is, but I'm a stunt on them real hard.
Well, not. if the Run Right Track and Field Challenge gets us indoor tracks in AZ in Texas, I'm in.
Go for it.
I'll do the challenge. Let's go.
I can only imagine like what a 24-hour on a 200 track would feel like.
No. We can't have it on a 200. It's got to be the 400. There's no compromising on that.
No, I'm aware. I'm just trying to think of what that would be like. I'm just like, cool, I'm on this bank. Like, you would jack your hips up so bad. It would be nuts.
Yeah.
It'd be so insane. But, man, I have had some of my best. Actually, my 800 PR is on a banked indoor track in Reggie Lewis.
How'd that feel?
I had a Hoppa guy. Honestly, that race was kind of crazy because I used to do jumping jacks on the start line. Like, it's my last, like primer thing. And apparently the dude just like didn't see me doing them. So I literally was like doing jumping jacks and I was like, oh, we're all getting set. So I was literally getting into position as the gun went off. So I just like had this rolling start and I'm like, that's not legal, but here we are. I was already in the back. It didn't matter. And then, on the last lap, the dude in front of me like stumbled and I was like on the inside of lane two, like in the bank. So I'm like in the turn, like curving. And he stumbles, and I'm like, this is how it happens. Like, I'm going to have to, like, bring out the steeplechase moves over this DI. Luckily, he kept on his feet, and I went around him on the back stretch. I'm moving. We come onto the home stretch four wide. So we, like, literally had, like, dudes coming off into lane three. It was insane. It was just, like, this crazy kick. It was fun. It was a good time. And then I got plantar fasciitis, like, 2 days later, and that was the end of my season. That was a bummer. But I still remember that day gloriously. And every time one of my high schoolers tries to talk about how they want to get out of a workout or something, I'd be like, listen, no excuses. This is me in the 800. Like, I don't care if something happens around you. You better get around it and make moves happen. I just stunt on my high schoolers. That's my coaching philosophy. That's the takeaway from this. And I used to have wheels, and I still demonstrate them on occasion when I don't pull my hamstring in the process. Thanks, adulthood.
I was just trying to chase Joe Gray with no fitness.
That's dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though we had this entire conversation last week, like he was going to win this thing. Happy that prediction played out. Didn't think it was going to be as close as it was.
So close. So freaking close. Yeah. The one thing that I wish they had was like my only critique of the live stream is like we needed that closing drone shot. They had someone chasing Joe. You could at one point see, God, we got to get this iPad hooked back up so I can just show this footage on this podcast because it's so good. You see like Joe, Greg, and then like Darren and then Andy, but then they just sit like right behind Joe chasing him down the mountain, which is really cool. It felt like you were like running right with him, but then you didn't see where Darren was until like the finish shot went live, and then it was like he almost got it.
Right there.
Yeah, it would have been one of those moments like the Justin Grunwald where you can just see it like, what? Is he going to do it? And just catching him all the way down. So just add some aerials to the finish and we'll be good. No one gets hurt.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the tricky part, you know, like in cycling where – like if the gap gets small enough, like all the cameras and the team cars like have to get out the gap so that the cyclists can bridge up. We just got to figure out a way to communicate to media folks when we're filming things like, hey, like that guy's coming, like get out the way. You can duck in behind him and then you get that second person view, which is also tight. But yeah, we've come a long way with live streaming ultra races domestically in the last year. Like, I'm not going to. Like, we're getting really nitpicky. I get
it.
Fine.
Oh, yeah. But, like, oh, yeah. Well, it's because we got spoiled at Black Canyon with Tony Hill's, like, amazing drone shots. We do want to make mention here of something that happened at the Marathon de Sable. There was a French runner passed away during the second stage. So just wanted to, like, make mention of that here on the pod. And so the Marathon de Sables is a stage race, of course. I think it's probably the most famous one in the world, 35-year-old race. And I think this was, yeah, it was during the second stage, second day. They haven't released the name, it sounds like, but the runner was in their mid-50s, experienced. They have like some pretty intensive health physicals by doctors prior to the race, so passed all the medical checks, completed the first one, and then sounds like had some sort of an episode and out on the course and fell to the ground. And it sounds like they had some help immediately there. So they had doctors, two runners that were running the race were doctors, and they were like right there. So they immediately began helping. They activated the SOS beacon. They had a helicopter there. Sounds like the medical director was there within minutes, I guess. So I don't know how many minutes that means, but they were not able to resuscitate him. So just like, you know, thoughts to that runner's family and to everyone out there that's running that race.
Life is fickle.
So
take nothing for granted. Yeah.
That's it on that one. What else do we got? Anything to cover? Anything else?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, it's a pretty big weekend. So, at least in the run flat world. So we have two World Marathon Majors happening here stateside. We have Chicago Marathon on Sunday. We've got the Boston Marathon on Monday. Let's start with Chicago, shall we? So let me pull up the entrance list. If I can find where I put that tab. So in terms of Chicago, there have been a few changes since like the original list was outlined. So we've had a few extra people hop in, but in terms of big names that many people who listen to this podcast will recognize, Sarah Hall in, Galen Rupp in, we've got a few extra folks that got put in, Jacob Thompson, the American Ian Butler has been moved up to the elite field. Sarah Pagano on the women's side has been moved into the elite field. Tristan Van Ord. We also still have Ruben Kipyego, Dixon Chumba, Kengo Suzuki. Like, this Chicago Marathon is going to just be mayhem off the jump. As long as the weather accommodates, we're going to see huge packs running very fast. I'm not going to say that Galen Rupp is swinging for the American record, but if he's trying to bounce back from his eighth place finish in Tokyo, there have been rumors that he might be trying to, you know, atone for that situation. So Chicago on Sunday, going to be fast. Realistically, it's probably the last real, like, quote unquote, fast World Marathon Major that we have left. Boston and New York, not known for being fast, and Tokyo's not happening. So if you want to see a sub 204 on the men's side, Chicago's going to be where it happens. And if he can get dragged along, you know, this could be an outstanding performance on the men's side. Women's side is just going to be deep. It's not going to be as deep as London, but we'll see a lot more, hopefully. It looks like we're going to see a lot more back and forth action happening, competitive for the win. I want to shout out that we have three wheelchair athletes. Got to show some love to them. So let me make sure I pull up the full names here. So we have Marcel Hug and Daniel Romanchuk on the men's side, and Tatiana McFadden on the women's side, going to be towing the line at Chicago, hopping on a plane, and all three of them will then be participating in the elite wheelchair fields in Boston, as will obviously Shalane Flanagan going for her third and fourth sub 3 hour attempts. So get excited. It's going to be mayhem. Speaking of Boston, these fields are going to be ridiculous. So looking at the elite fields, it's a lot of folks who are from African nations, right? We always have a stellar field that comes from Ethiopia and Kenya. The top 13 seeds on the men's side are from either Ethiopia or Kenya, led out by Asefa Mangtu. We have Wilson Chibet. We've got Thomas Kiplagat. We've got, between everyone involved on the men's and women's side, just like for context at Boston, we have, I think it's something like 14 former champions of the Boston Marathon. Like, it's something absurd. And so in terms of some of the folks who've been at the top of the board recently, or folks that have been killing it in the COVID year, Yuki Kawauchi is back on the men's side. We've got Abdi, you know, was third at the Olympic trials, ran for USA in Tokyo. He's back. Scott Fobble, back. Colin Benny, who ran 209.38 at the Marathon Project, back. Scott Smith. You got Parker Stinson, CJ Albertson, who is like everybody's favorite low-key, I'll run treadmill Zwift workouts and call it a day. He's in the elite field. You've got so many folks. Peter Bromka, going to be running as a master's athlete. The first person out, I guess technically second person out from the U.S. Olympic trials. He's going to be here. Not in the elite field, but Mario Fraioli, just like friend of ultra runners and runners everywhere in America and worldwide, he is going to be out there. On the women's side, Edna Kiplagat's in the mix. Jordan Hesse is in the mix. Mary DeBaba, you've got Des Linden going to be back. You've got Molly Huddle, Caroline Rodich. This list of folks is insane. But I got to shout out some folks you might not have heard yet. Also, I just want to point out real quick, Devin Yanko is listed in the elite field for the Boston Marathon. That's wild. So get excited for that. But on the women's side, Caroline Shepkowicz and Elena Taub are debuting at the Boston Marathon for their first go. So we'll see what they can bust out. And then on the men's side, Harvey Nelson and Leonard Barsatin, I believe, is how you pronounce that. And Jamal Yimmer. The three of them are going to be debuting their first marathon. Harvey Nelson has like a whole sweat elite video that you can watch on YouTube. You might actually have a couple. He's from Flagstaff, McCurdy trained pro. But this is going to be a nuts Boston field. The weather right now is looking muggy and warm. I think the overnight low, last time I checked, because I'm going to be running, is 58. And the high is like 73.
Dang.
So originally it was like a 40% chance of rain. That had apparently moved out the picture, but it's not going to be dry. It's not Phoenix. So Boston's going to be a mess. It's going to be great to watch. So it's also going to be very interesting because I can't speak for the other marathon majors, but the way that Boston's working is that elite field for the men and the women, and then the wheelchair fields are going to go in mass, normal gun start. And then every age grouper is just a rolling start. It's like you get off the bus, and then however long it takes you to get from the bus to the start line, like you do your thing and then start when you want. So it's just going to be mayhem. With, you're not going to be able to use the on course clocks unless you know exactly when you cross the start line, because they're going to be timed to the elites and you're going to be like, you're doing mental math the entire time every mile. So it's going to be, I have a hunch that by the time we talk next week, we're going to hear a lot of people who are like, I didn't know I was off pace, or I didn't know I was going way too hard. So it's going to be fun.
Yikes. Wow.
It's going to be good. But yeah, no, these are going to be very fun to watch. Boston always is streamed online. So if you happen to have the federal holiday off, then you have that luxury going for you. And then Chicago's a Sunday. I believe it's on the local NBC channel. So if you can track down Chicago NBC stuff, then you got that going for you as well. Yeah. And obviously we'll watch Shalane I'll try not to get completely demolished by her. It's going to happen, but I'll try not to. And yeah, it'll be fun.
And then you did a race. We'll next Tuesday. You did a race this last weekend, sir. How'd that go?
It was good. It was good. Yeah, I did the Rock and Roll San Jose Half Marathon. Really, I originally signed up for it in like May and was like, oh, it's going to be my like full gas tune up for New York, because at the time I wasn't in Boston because I had missed the cutoff by 2 or 3 seconds. But yeah, I went into this one recognizing I had 8 days until Boston, ran the first 15K relatively conservatively, just like good marathon pace effort. Everything checked out, and then just like did a quasi workout, 3 minute on, 3 minute float for the last 6 or so K. And yeah, like I feel good about it. I rebounded, easy run yesterday, did a track workout today. And so, I'm feeling good heading into Boston. Number one goal is to get out healthy. Number two goal is have fun. So, yeah, don't get
good
me wrong.
Good goals to have.
I say that now, and then like I know that like the first 3 miles of Boston, I'm gonna be like, let's be conservative, but it's like crazy downhill, and I'm like, well, I'm on this pace now, and then my ego will take over, and something stupid will happen. But as it currently stands, my goal is to just run some sort of like workout style plan, or be like, hey, I'm only gonna like press until this mileage and then like just cruise to the finish, something. I haven't decided exactly how I'm going to play it yet. Because after Boston, I have 27 days till New York, and that's the A race. But, yeah, dude, I'm looking forward to having a good time. So if you're in Boston, let me know. I'm not one of these people who flies in early, so I will really only be around Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. They don't sponsor this, but I'm going to be at the Whoop. I'm planning, based on the weather, to be at the Whoop shakeout run on Sunday. And then, you know, it's 4 miles easy, which was already on the plan. So I'm like, might as well go hang out with Sam Parsons of 10 Man Elite and go for an easy jog. And then, yeah, I'll be on that like 7:30 bus up to Hopkinton on Monday. And then I'll be at some local bar right near the finish line, probably after all said and done. So hit me up, say hey. And then Tuesday, I don't know what I'm doing. I got to keep running because I got cross country races and I got New York to get ready for, and I have quad dipsy. So no rush for the wicked, but it's going to be fun, man. And then apparently, I guess we'll do a podcast from the hotel. And
yeah.
It'll be enjoyable.
Yeah, I'll get a hotel room as well, just here in Phoenix, and we'll both be in hotel rooms. So it'll be perfect. Just kidding.
Let's save that energy until we're live commentating happily in 100. How about that?
Perfect. Sounds like just a couple more comments in the chat, and then we'll kind of wrap things up. Alan Stark, when you get back to longer stuff, isn't Biggs in a couple weeks? I also heard they're having an OG group at Laz's the week before. Any knowledge of that? I don't know what that means. I think there's like the Little Dog front yard ultra going on. You'll have to catch the news for that. But Biggs is coming up, and we should touch on that maybe next week. We can do a preview. That would be exciting to talk about. I think there's going to be some other big announcements in the next couple days regarding Biggs that you should stay tuned for, and we can discuss that next week. I'm not running it, and I'm not going. That's not what it is, but it's something else that I am privy to. Okay.
Okay.
Cool.
I like it.
That's all we got. That's the show.
Good. Yeah, you're going to have to carry next week's show because I will be knackered from running a marathon. So. All right.
I'll be ready.
Thank you for teasing content already, because
yeah,
I'll be asleep. It'll be great. Perfect. Yeah, dude, it's going to be fun. I'm excited for this week in running. It's going to be a fun week to just track folks and just, you know, get excited about what the fall can bring, right? Leaves are changing. It's getting a little cooler. It's getting darker earlier. This is true. But, like, you can get outside, get hype off of all the energy that's happening in the running space, and, like, just keep it moving. So take this time to, like, reflect on yourself. figure out what you want to do for the last quarter of 2021, and like, let's just get things going.
Q4, baby. Let's streak it.
Dude, I like it. I like it a lot. And I like all of you. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate you guys for being here, especially if you're live in the chat. Make sure to share the pod with a friend, either on the YouTube page, search for Mountain Outpost, or on your podcatcher of choice. Steep Life Media channel is where you find this bad boy. And we will join you all next week for more content, running, life, love, happiness, and whatever stupidity the rest of the world brings. That's been Jamil. Jam, jam. I've been Skyler. Skizzle Fresh. This has been a podcast. And we'll catch you guys next week.
See ya.